Welcome to the Wellness Renaissance Podcast, exploring topics to help you find the pieces that fit into your health puzzle. Hey there, thanks for stopping by. We have an interview today with DJ White, and I will go into a broader introduction in a minute, but basically she's a Pilates instructor and personal trainer. Her history is quite interesting, actually. And she's going to share her long-term experience with the ketogenic diet. And I know that you might say, hey, doesn't that sound familiar? Didn't we do something with that earlier? Yes, we did. We had Shane Cortland, who has had a shorter experience with the keto diet, give us a really great overview. And DJ goes a little more in depth and gives us some resources and that kind of thing. But I want to throw out a few housekeeping things. First of all, if you are listening to us on the web and you would like an email reminder to let you know that there is a new podcast out, you can go to the website, wellnessrenpodcast.com. You can also get to the podcast but by going to wellnessren.com, and you'll see the podcast button. Click there, gets you to the same place. Under the subscribe for iTunes, and if you subscribe for iTunes, you'll be made aware that there is a podcast too. But if you don't use iTunes, you can go beneath that and put in your email address, and then we'll just send you an email that says, hey, it's out and about. Take a look. So just wanted to let you know about that, because for some people, that sounds like it's just an easier way to do it. And a couple events coming up here in Duluth, Minnesota, is the Northland Community Wellness Day, and the website for that is northlandcwd.org. Northland Community Wellness Day 2018 is going to be April 14th from 10 to 2, and it is at the Essentia Health Heritage Sports Center. I've been involved with this since day one, and it's always been a really great event, and it's grown every year, very family oriented. It's fantastic. So check it out. Free to come on down. So please do. I will be there. Come and say hello. I will also be at the Spirit and Wellness Connection. The website for that is spiritwellnessconnection.com. And if you go to the website, they have a really nice about page that has just kind of the explanation of what this is all about and why it was formed to begin with. And then there's also a speakers and a vendors link on the top too. So you can learn more about who's going to be there and strategically plan your day with speakers and vendors, etc. It's going to be Saturday, May 19th at the Radisson Hotel. So check it out. If you look at the speaker list, you will notice some names you might recognize from past podcast episodes. All right, on to the topic at hand. So we are exploring the ketogenic diet today again. And as you may have noticed, that there was an episode not too long ago. This is a different perspective, a longer term perspective and a health professional's perspective. A little bit about DJ. She is, as I said, a Pilates instructor and personal trainer in the Twin Cities. And she's currently training people from 8 years old to 102 years old. Think about that and let that sink in for a minute. She is a personal trainer for a 102-year-old person, right? So when we're getting too old to do something, maybe we're not. I thought it would be fun to interview this 102-year-old person to see, when did she start training? You know, how new of a thing is that for her? You certainly see stories about people who didn't start training until they were in their 50s and 60s, etc. I know that's a sidestep, but I think it's one worth thinking about a little bit. If you're 102 and you're still actually working with a personal trainer, the point of if you want to keep moving, you have to keep moving kind of thing. DJ was a competitive lifter and bodybuilder, and she started in her 30s. And she is turning 58 this year. So she's been living a kind of, and she'll talk about this, a kind of keto diet for many, many years. But she's been doing the keto diet as we know it for about the last 3 years or so. Cancer runs in her family kind of high. And so she was doing research to determine how she could reduce her risk. And basically, her research led her to this diet. So that's how this came about for her. And something that she mentions, but I'm just going to kind of preload it here, is she talked about doing this diet not to lose weight, but to lose fat. So she was already a very fit person, bodybuilding, personal trainer, etc., before she came to the diet, but she wanted to lose fat, the fat that hangs out in our midsection that you've probably heard is being called out as the fat that we store that puts us at higher risk for cancer. She talks about a lot of resources, and you can find those in the show notes as well. And as we go forward, we're going to be exploring in different podcasts, different diets, different types of diets as well. That's just something that I have a high interest in and people ask a lot of questions about. So one of the things I do want to mention, because this comes up, that the keto diet and the paleo diet, they are two different things, but they have similarities to them. So the keto diet is focused more on getting good fats and having lower carbohydrates, where the paleo diet is very similar in aspects of the type of foods you were eating, but you're not so much focused on how many carbs you're taking in. And that's a very simplistic definition, and there's a lot of different ways to do paleo, and there's different theories on keto and how to do it well and do it healthy too. So I just want to toss that out there. If this is something that you're interested in looking at, it's worth looking at the research and methods that are out there. So let's dive into the conversation. I really do appreciate DJ for taking her time to share her experience and expertise with us.
Well, thank you for having me.
Go ahead and tell us a little bit about what you do.
Well, I'm a personal trainer and Pilates instructor. I train the youngest being an 8-year-old ice skater and the most senior 102.
Whoa, and, awesome.
And it's a labor of love. I really believe when people really take on their health and wellness, the rest of their life works. But it's a second career for me. Okay. I started out as an executive computer geek at Honeywell, and after a severe allergic reaction to corporate America, decided to get involved in training after hiring one to cope with the stress of corporate America.
Oh.
So I've kind of gone full circle. Originally went to college to be a physical therapist, and I'm pretty close.
Yeah? Are you continuing to do that as well?
No. I really love the personal training piece. Okay. It's something that has a different slant than physical therapy.
Sure.
In terms of what opportunities I really have to make a difference with people.
I love your statement of your allergic reaction to corporate America, because it's so, I mean, so many people, I think, have that experience but don't quite know what to do with it or don't know how to, you know, get out of it. It's great that you had the recognition of, I need to deal with the stress. And
oh, gosh, yeah.
That's awesome. Well, good for you. That's very inspiring on its own. So, all right, we're here mainly because of your interest in keto, and I'm going to be, I think I told you, I have another interview that I'm adding to this of somebody who is doing it and doing really well, but I'm really fascinated. I want you to talk a little bit more about maybe the science of it, like what does it mean to put your body into ketosis? What does that mean? And I absolutely want to talk about your history, how long you've been doing it, and then extend that to even before that when you were doing keto, but it wasn't called keto.
Exactly. So long before keto became popular, I was involved as a competitive bodybuilder and powerlifter. And when a competitive bodybuilder starts to get leaner, we actually call it either carb cycling or we deplete our carbs altogether. So our body was literally going into a state of ketosis, which is when your body is burning stored body fat as a fuel source without us using that term per se. So long before the ketogenic movement and all of the health and research that I've been exposed to today, I was doing a ketogenic diet without even understanding that's what was going on. Now, more recently, within the last 3 years, I've become involved in the ketogenic approach to health and wellness out of a commitment to minimize my risk to cancer. My family health history is extremely high risk, both on my mother and father's side, My mom is a 3-time breast cancer survivor. My father was challenged with lymphoma and fought it for 4 years. And he's one who came out of corporate. So I really look at somebody who recognized at age 55, it's time to go. And thank goodness he did, because we had 14 wonderful years with him. And then a twin, 11-month-old twin, my niece, who was also challenged with leukemia. So when I started exploring ways of minimizing my risk, the ketogenic diet or ketogenic approach to nutrition kept coming up. And learning about different cancers and how they feed on sugars or carbs, if you will, that are metabolized as sugar, it became really important to me to understand a ketogenic approach to nutrition and the health benefits for someone like myself who, you know, genetic mapping and all this other stuff I've done suggests it's something I really need to be mindful of. So I took on ketogenic as an approach to my nutrition for health and wellness, even though I'm not actively competing as a competitive bodybuilder. Mm-hmm. It's something that's so easy for me to do, having been involved in that nutritional approach.
So yeah, you've got a lot of experience behind you.
Yeah.
Makes it. How do you feel like the ketogenic diet that you're doing today differs from how you ate years ago? Is there a difference, or is it pretty?
I think the difference today is we have a greater understanding of our bodies and what is possible.
Okay.
When I would carb deplete everybody, I don't care if they were a medical doctor or my mother, would have a fit saying, you've got to have the carbs, you've got to have the carbs. Yet if you look at cavemen and women, they weren't baking bread, you know? So we as a society, the American approach to nutrition has always included carbs, though today they're much more highly processed than, say, when my mother or grandmother, great-grandmother prepared meals. Those carbs came from potatoes or sweet potatoes or rice, mm-hmm. which again wasn't processed the way today's foods are.
It's interesting, the whole daily, the whole, like you were saying, the amount of bread that we eat. And I know one mm-hmm. argument that comes up a lot is, well, read, you know, daily bread. And I don't remember all of my history times of what people ate, but I know I was just, mm-hmm. somebody else was talking about that and their grandma had said, daily bread, yeah, but we didn't have bread every day. Bread was a treat.
Correct.
We had it. It was a rarity.
Exactly.
We appreciated that piece of bread. And it wasn't every day. It took a lot of
and I agree.
Loaf, you know?
Exactly.
So you didn't eat it quickly or often because of the amount of work it takes to do it. So it was interesting.
Exactly. And it's funny now, as you mentioned that, I make my own ketogenic bread with almond flour.
Okay.
And I know it doesn't take any time compared to when my mother would bake bread.
Mm-hmm. So you do have some of the replacements for things like bread and things like that that you use?
Oh, certainly.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah.
Wonderful. That's sometimes I think good for people to know if they're kind of thinking about something. It's that shift. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes, I mean, I've certainly done diets where I'm having no bread, no replacement, nothing.
Right.
And it's fine once you get into mm-hmm. it, but sometimes having that help to get into it, or the convenience of taking food with you, you know, to make your
exactly
own bread, have a sandwich, which, mm-hmm. you know, all the stuff you can put on a sandwich can be perfectly legal.
Oh, gosh, yeah. You know? Yeah. And making it with almond flour and eggs and baking powder. I'm trying to think if there's anything else in it. I mean, it's so simple mm-hmm. to make. And butter. It's so simple to make. And the texture of it is very similar to regular bread.
Okay.
So I can do that for my hamburgers. I can do that for tuna sandwich. And nice. It's very, yeah.
I might have to get this recipe and post it out there and use it for myself. Because the one thing for me in the morning, it's like I need something sometimes, not always, but sometimes I need mm-hmm. like a little bit of comfort food. And it doesn't need to be wheat bread. That sensation, I think, is what I'm sometimes my body's looking for.
Sure. So. It's the same with pizza. Mm-hmm. You know, my pizzas are made with cauliflower crumbles.
Okay.
And again, it takes no time. I use eggs a lot for people that have sensitivities to eggs. There's other options. You put together cauliflower crumbles, or now they call it cauliflower rice. It's already prepared with a couple eggs or one egg, depending upon the size of the pizza. and a little Parmesan and mozzarella cheese, and form it into a pie and any seasoning you want, and form it into a pizza pie and bake that for maybe 10 to 12 minutes and take it out and put your toppings and your sauce on and put it back in, and you've got a pizza in less than a half an hour.
Nice.
It's good.
This is great, actually. I love that you're talking about the foods that you're eating. Okay, you're eating bread, you're eating pizza. That's always wonderful for people. Even if they're modified, but it's just that, it's that food that you're familiar with that you're like,
sure. Oh,
this. And it's expanding your taste palette to be, you know,
it is.
To different tastes. But we do that all the time with different food that we buy at the grocery store, frozen meals or fast food.
Oh, we're
expanding our taste palette there too. It's just they put a lot more salt and sugar to make us like them.
Of course.
That, right. So talk about what you might eat for breakfast or when you go out to eat. Some of those things that kind of, what does your daily life look like?
Where is
it challenging? Where does it work?
So for me, it's no longer a challenge, and I think that's part of the journey. Mm-hmm. I really enjoy meat protein, so protein's always been easy for me. Snacking on nuts and seeds is easy for me, and usually higher fat, though I still love my chicken, and I will enjoy fish as well, or turkey. I'm trying to think of the easiest way to explain my day-to-day. When I eat ketogenically, and for me, that's my lifestyle right now, but as I reflect back to prior to ketogenic, I was eating every 2 to 3 hours.
Okay.
And that habit, if you will, was not a part of my lifestyle growing up. That's something I learned with competitive bodybuilding and powerlifting. So I was always having some type of carb, usually a sweet potato or yam because it was convenient, with some kind of protein and some kind of vegetable. With the ketogenic approach to nutrition, I am much more satiated, satisfied, and I don't have hunger like I did when I had carbs.
Okay.
So I like to share that because people are like, you're going to starve. Actually, you're more satisfied, and I don't eat as frequently. Mm-hmm. So when I share what my day-to-day is, I don't want people to think I'm starving because I'm not. I'm very satisfied because the diet's higher in fat, which brings you to satiety. Mm-hmm. So for me, having bacon and eggs in the morning, and it's usually a whole egg, where there was a time where I only ate egg whites. Okay. The dog would get the yolks. A couple eggs and bacon is fine for me. And that, when I have it in the morning, is usually late morning. I will have fat coffee for breakfast, and that's got Kerrygold butter in it, coconut oil in it, cinnamon, and turmeric.
Okay.
And I blend that in a Nutribullet. And when I drink that first thing in the morning, I'm not hungry until about 11 o'clock. So the eggs and bacon are at that time, or it's me grabbing a vegetable, usually spinach, when it's nicer outside. I'm in Minnesota. It's freezing. Right now, we're having a heat wave at 41 degrees.
I know.
But when it's, warmer weather, I'll have a spinach salad with chicken breasts or turkey or tuna and put all kinds of olives and things that are higher in salt, which my body craves. When you're in a ketogenic diet, you usually eliminate water more quickly, and the different salts in your body, which I won't go into all the science about BHB salts and all that, but you're eliminating salts, more natural salts from your body. So you usually crave them. And for me, that's usually olives or my nuts, my pistachios or my almonds, usually smoked, that I enjoy because of the higher salt. So we can come back to that later if you'd like to. In the wintertime, now I'll saute my spinach and have a hamburger or have the same proteins that I've mentioned. And that is very satisfying till probably 6 in the evening. And then if I am hungry, I will grab another vegetable and a protein, but it's usually something that's higher in fat. I'm also one who's practiced what they call intermittent fasting.
Okay.
And that has everything to do with my routine as a personal trainer. I, especially this time of year, I'm extremely busy. Mm-hmm. So I will make two of the coffees that I mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. I'll drink one in the morning. I'll drink another one midday. And I won't eat until late afternoon. And I'm not hungry. I'm very satisfied. And when I do eat, I can't tell you that I ever have that super full feeling. I like that I have lots of energy and I'm never overstuffed. So for me, being overstuffed is sitting down to a good Italian meal of pasta or ravioli or lasagna. Mm. Okay, because I'll mention all of those because they're usually most familiar to those who are probably listening to your podcast. When I have my pasta, if you will, it's usually spaghetti squash with sauce on it. Mm-hmm. And I might put some Parmesan cheese on it or not. So the texture, if you will, mimics that of spaghetti. Mm-hmm. I usually can have what looks like the same serving size of what we would normally eat, a plate of spaghetti, but I never ever feel as full as we did when we ate it. Mm-hmm. And I love that. Mm-hmm. It's almost like I'm overindulging, if you will, because of the serving size, but I never ever feel like I need to go take a nap.
And that's
you know, it's kind of like, exactly. You know, to make my keto muffins and have a Thanksgiving dinner, thoroughly enjoy all of the above, but I never ever feel like I'm going to go doze watching TV or football.
Mm-hmm. And I know
makes a difference,
right? I know that comes up with some people that I'm working with right now who are talking about their whole pasta and just I'm so tired, and they've started to cut down the pasta or change the kind of pasta and trying to find things that work because they love it, but they don't like the full feeling.
Sure,
and it's as much as it does taste good. It is that you walk away going and needing a nap. Not so much fun.
Exactly.
Couple questions as you were talking. You were talking about the whole chicken and turkey, obviously not hugely fat foods, but there's nothing really wrong with eating them on a keto diet.
No, not at all.
Okay.
Not at all.
Right.
And when I have the higher fat meats, which are usually beef or maybe some pork, you know, for me to put half dozen slices of bacon under the broiler, I will do that as a snack.
Okay.
You know, so let's see, today is Saturday. So I had my coffee about 11 o'clock. I decided I wanted some bacon. And I'm trying to think, did I have shared it with the dog? But it was probably 5 or 6 slices.
Okay.
That's all I've had today. And I'm perfectly content. This evening, I'll go to play with a friend. I will eat something before I go. And this sounds kind of funny, but it's to make sure that my stomach's not growling. Not because I'm really hungry, per se. I know of what I've eaten today, and I want to make sure I have something. Mm-hmm. So I'll make sure that I will have a good vegetable and some kind of meat source before I go.
And what about one thing I can imagine somebody saying as they're thinking about this is how do you get in your servings of fruits and vegetables?
Very good question. So I will make smoothies, first of all, and I am watching the sugars again. Will only do berries for my fruits. I will not do a watermelon or even an apple or a pear.
Or banana.
Bananas, yeah. Which now that's a good way to put me on a diet. Leave those on the counter in the kitchen and I will not enter. So I'm not a good example of a banana person. I ate them as a child, but something happened along the way and I don't eat them anymore. It's always berries and it's always dark green vegetables that go into my smoothies.
Okay.
And I prefer that as my way to get them in.
Okay.
Now, if I have a taste for something sweet, I will easily grab a container, the smaller containers of blueberries, and eat those like people might eat raisins or might eat candy.
Sure.
They're sweet enough. They're lower on the glycemic index, and they're not going to throw me out of ketosis.
Okay. And I think one thing that I'm sure I've mentioned on this podcast before, but the whole once you quit eating sugar, everything's slightly sweet. Berries, blueberries taste so much sweeter.
Oh, yeah. You know? Very much so.
Yeah.
And it's a sweetness to your palate instead of a sweetness to your brain, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
A number of people will reference sugar as the brain's crack cocaine,
mm-hmm.
because we're hardwired. Our brain will and our habits support it. Neurologically, there's a relationship there. So once we have certain things, it will trigger us to have those things again. Where I can enjoy the blueberries, they're sweet and sweet enough for me, yet it's not triggering me to now go on this chocolate candy, hard candy, you know, mission before I'm satisfied.
Mm-hmm.
I don't find, now maybe other people have a different experience, but I'm not binging on things like that because I'm always satisfied when I have them.
The interesting thing sometimes about limiting one's diet is that you find out there's more freedom. You're not so tied to the cravings and the, oh my gosh, I just have to have something.
Exactly. And then even if you do indulge in something, it's a different kind of indulgence.
Mm-hmm.
You know? It's very different. So, and the reason I share that is there really is a mind-body relationship that I believe works at a cellular and neurological level when you have that kind of awareness about your body.
Yes, I think that's very true. So when you talk about indulgences, like what would an indulgence be? Like, would that be having a sweet potato or some brown rice, or what does that look like for you? And where do those things fall in your food right now?
Sure. I would say indulgence for me right now, I love this 85% cacao chocolate that come in little squares that are about, I'm going to say the size of two Dove bars flattened, or not Dove bars, Dove squares flattened.
Oh, right.
And that and a little bit of Merlot, that's an indulgence to me. Because the flavor is something that I really enjoy, but I don't need a lot of it.
Okay.
Now, you mentioned sweet potatoes. If I get a good size sweet potato, and I literally just put up the size of my hand. So there's my hand.
Okay.
It's, I'm going to say, maybe 6 inches long.
Okay.
4-6 inches. Yeah. And to get a good sweet potato or even butternut squash and put butter on it, and some cinnamon, to me, that's a treat.
Okay.
Of course, I'm putting the butter on it because I want the higher fat, but it's a more fibrous carb, so our bodies are going to metabolize that differently. Mm-hmm. That would be an indulgence.
Okay. And somebody who is doing a keto diet, that's something you're not going to want to have too frequently. Right?
Exactly. It's a treat. Definitely a treat.
Okay. I'm thinking of Minnesota winters and having the food and that, you know.
You got it.
How to sort of satisfy that craving or that need. And maybe once you're in ketosis or whatever, you're not needing that so much.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? So that's your experience? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And what about because I know the long-term effects, there's a lot of concern with the confusing science studies about meat and meat being safe, not safe, all of that.
Right.
And maybe another question for you too is, are you careful in eating clean meat? Hi, puppy.
Yes, he's determined to get in here.
Are you careful with that?
I think I'm more mindful of it. So there's certain places that I've chosen to buy my meat.
Mm-hmm.
For example, right now I have on the stove a free-range chicken.
Mm-hmm.
What did I do? It was a farmer during the Thanksgiving holiday, and I bought like 10, five for gifts and five for me. And I have cookie on the stove now, and I don't know the best way to describe it, But there are, the first thing that comes to mind is like a fabric kind of netting, if you will, that you can prepare foods in.
Okay.
So when you put the chicken in that and put it in a pot of water, of course, everything's going to stay within the bag. But of course, you're getting all of the wonderful things that come out of the chicken.
Okay.
Right? And then I put all my veggies, which are my leeks or my turnips, my, oh goodness, I can't think of everything I put in there today. But all my veggies are in a different bag. And I took the chicken out and put my veggies in that broth, if you will, and cook that. So now I'll go back and add carrots and put my chicken back in there and let that cook some more. So my carrots are now being added, and I will probably debone the chicken and put the meat right in the broth. Mm-hmm. That is something that I probably wouldn't necessarily do with a store-bought chicken. Mm-hmm. And that's a mental thing on my part, I'll be honest. But with the free-range chicken, I'm very comfortable about the bone marrow and all that that's going to be now in that broth.
Right.
People have asked me, do you go and do your own bone broth and that type of thing? Mm-hmm. I choose to get my collagen from a collagen protein that comes from a brand called Bulletproof. And they're the folks who came up with the Bulletproof coffee, which is the fat coffee.
Yes. Okay.
So as you go on this journey of figuring out what it is you're going to eat, and you're more mindful of the quality of your meat and your veggies, that type of thing, you'll also find some other, I'm going to say, options to supplementing your nutrition that are very good for you. So I am very mindful of where my meat comes from. If I can get grass-fed any day, and building a relationship, of course, as a personal trainer, building a relationship with local farmers who I know are organic and all that, it makes a difference. It just becomes a part of your lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So talk about the long-term effects. I mean, I'm thinking health, like, and I want to go back to this before I forget.
Sure.
You mentioned the whole cancer. You kind of went on this too, out of the stopping or reducing.
Minimizing, yeah.
Right, exactly. And I know one of the things you had said to me when we talked another time was you weren't trying to lose weight, but you were trying to lose fat around the middle. And that's where we know that's where the highest risk cancer comes from, when we have fat in the middle. So I just wanted to draw back to that attention because I thought that was a really interesting thing that you said and worthwhile to read.
Sure.
Talk about tests or any, you know, anything that you know that you're doing that you're feeling good, that you're in the right space health wise and there's nothing kind of indicating to you, oh my gosh, my cholesterol through the roof or whatever.
Right.
That's exactly what people are concerned about.
Exactly. And so I believe in proper testing. You get your blood work done annually, and if it needs to be done more frequently, of course, do that. I, in terms of longitudinal research, when we spoke before, I mentioned the bodybuilding, and bodybuilders have been carb depleting or minimizing their carbs for years. And we go back to cavemen and women, and we weren't having the carbs. So when people bring up, oh my gosh, longitudinal research, you don't have anything that shows that it's safe. And I said, well, you don't have anything that shows that I'm at risk. Babies, when they're born, drink their mother's breast milk. That's all ketogenic.
Okay.
There are no carbs and no sugars in that breast milk. And so I really encourage people to, I don't want to say do their research as much as just understand how the human body works, how it's worked for years, and how it's going to continue to work until, I don't know, I guess we as a society decide to change science, which I hope we don't do anytime soon, because we won't have any longitudinal research on that affects it going forward.
Right.
But when people become concerned about being ketogenic longitudinally, is that putting me at risk? I always encourage them, if that's their concern, then to do both. you can be in and out of ketosis and not put yourself at risk. And I mentioned the mind-body relationship. I know that being the oldest of four, and all of my siblings, there's four of us, have had major health challenges. And I truly believe that's associated with the stress of corporate America. We all have advanced degrees. And all of us went to corporate. I chose to leave. They are all still there. Mm-hmm. That's a personal choice. I do believe that if it's going to stress you out to be concerned about your health and wellness long term on a ketogenic diet, then you should cycle on and off. Mm-hmm. And then you should monitor your body, and that's being very mindful, not just blood work testing. Be very mindful. What is your energy like when you're on a ketogenic plan? Mm-hmm. And what is your energy like when you're not?
Right.
And that takes time, and it really takes commitment, and really takes brutal, brutal honesty with yourself. Mm-hmm. And not everybody wants to do that work.
That's true. Right.
Now, it takes time. Mm-hmm. It really, I mean, I'll be 58 this year. I started competitive bodybuilding in my 30s.
Okay.
And did my last show at age 50. Nice. And I'm starting to ramp up again to compete this year. And then again at age 60, maybe I'll retire, but I'll be honest, I'll be redefining retirement. So I doubt if that'll occur. When I did my last show at 50, I certainly had a better understanding of how my body responded to carb depleting when I did cardio, when I didn't do cardio. Mm-hmm. Those weekends that I carb depleted, how much protein I had, how much fat I had. And there is a science to it. Mm-hmm. But the science of everybody's body is different. Mm-hmm. And you've got to feel good about what you choose. Mm-hmm. And it's got to complement your lifestyle, or you're going to get a headache and be miserable. Mm-hmm. So I really encourage people to go by how they feel and where their mindset is, and just be open to learning. Mm-hmm. Whether you learn it out of a book or you learn it from your own experience.
Right.
You can't go wrong.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of the, if you believe, it's kind of the, if you believe something works, it
you
will,
got it.
You know, and
you got
also
it.
If you're not comfortable with it, like you said, it's not, you're mm-hmm. just going to be stressed about it, and then you're going to be questioning
sure.
it all the time. And
sure.
I'm one person who I've been paleo before, mm-hmm. and I felt good on paleo. It was the easiest diet for me to switch to. I prepared mm-hmm. very well for it, but it was easy to switch to. I didn't have afternoon slumps.
Sure.
I also would love to be a vegan, because I just like to know what that experience is. And I love the concept of, I love animals. Mm-hmm. So I believe in that too. But when I have been vegetarian for a period of time, mm-hmm. I haven't really felt great. I'd be willing to do it again. You know, mm-hmm. it's a lot of work to be vegan or vegetarian.
Yeah.
But I'd love to try it again and just give it the fair shot of, okay, how mm-hmm. do I actually feel? Because I think you're
yeah.
right. It's how
yeah.
do you feel? And I know very, very healthy vegans. And I know people have done great things nutritionally, vegan-wise, and they're just
yeah.
like, it's not for me. My body yeah. does not do this well.
And I've never been vegan. I have been an octavarian. I did, where it's just, I did cheese.
Okay. Is cheese
and
two eggs too?
I'm trying to remember if we did eggs or not.
Can't remember.
Gosh, it was so long ago. I want to say it's dairy.
Okay.
But I want to say the majority of what we ate was cheese. I don't think I did eggs. And how do I say this? I'm trying to be positive. But my ex-husband took me to a movie about how meat was prepared.
Oh.
And I walked out of there going, I'm not eating it anymore. And that's how I became, quote unquote, an octavarian.
Okay.
I still want to say that we had ice cream. So that's why I'm thinking it's dairy. And I don't remember eating eggs.
Okay.
I just remember cheese and ice cream.
And how did you feel during that time?
You know, I didn't feel bad, but I can't say I felt as good as I do now.
Okay.
I think the cheese, as we know, cheese, it's kind of a form of mold, if you will, mm-hmm. in terms of whether it was an allergic reaction or just feeling congested or it was or heavy or bloated, maybe. Okay. All of those words remind me of that time.
Okay. But you are still eating cheese now. Do you eat it in less amounts?
I do. Oh, much less amounts.
Okay.
Much less amounts. And I would tell you it's only white cheeses.
Oh, really?
I don't, yeah. And I'm sure that goes back to when I was training and my bodybuilding. It was just have the white cheeses. So there's a perfect example of something that I haven't let go of.
Okay.
You know.
Interesting. And white cheeses. So tell me, what's the difference between white cheeses and non-white cheeses?
At that time, it was lower fat.
Oh.
So here now I'm doing ketogenic, but exactly. It's so here I'm learning just in having conversation with you, something that I hadn't thought about in forever. Right? So that's what makes it so fascinating.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, I know the other person that I interviewed, he said, you know, he eats a ton of broccoli with a lot of cheese and then he can get the broccoli down.
Oh, gotcha. Gotcha.
I enjoy cheese, but my body only likes so much of it. So it's like, okay.
Yeah.
And I'm probably, it's probably a kind of cheese thing too. So it's interesting.
Well, it's, gosh, what can I say? I love it. And I can way overdo it in a minute. And I'm a New York minute. I can way overdo cheese. Mm-hmm. So I'm really, I don't buy it. I don't keep it in the house. Mm-hmm. I buy it when I'm going to make something specific. And then I thoroughly enjoy it when I do.
Okay. Well, that makes sense.
Yeah.
It's also kind of a treat.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And so obviously, like you said, you're conscientious of the testing. You're getting testing. And does your doctor have any concerns, or is it pretty much, hey, you're doing great, you're healthy, all is well, keep up.
Yeah, kind of it's pretty much you're doing great.
Okay.
I think, and I'll be, not to offend any doctors out there, I am like my own advocate. So I don't look to my doctors, if you will, to do anything but confirm when I'm at risk in terms of my health and wellness.
Okay.
Versus judge how I do it. Did I say that well?
I think so. That they're looking at the details and you're deciding a little more what those details mean.
Exactly. Okay. And even how to get there.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
And you've got a lot of research behind you in this. So, I mean, it's, you know, it's tricky. Doctors, they know a lot and they don't know everything either. So, so when we're doing our own studying and trying to figure all that out, yeah, it's not that I don't want to, not that I want to tell anybody not to listen to their doctor, but like you say, we have to be our own advocate too. And
pay exactly
on there. So give me some resources, like maybe if you happen to have off the top of your head, I know you had mentioned the Ketogenic Bible as a good book. And
yes.
Got a bunch of research in it too.
Yes, okay. It is. The Ketogenic Bible, I thoroughly enjoy. And it's written by Dr. Jacob Wilson and Ryan Lowry.
Okay. And so that's one of the good go-to books. Any
like
websites or something that people could look at that would give them a really good list of these are the foods you eat, these are the foods you don't eat. And if there's any, and maybe I should ask you this too, is there any kind of balancing out that one needs to be, you know, is it difficult to figure out proteins versus all of the other things versus fat? Or do you not worry so much about those details and kind of be a little mindful, but eat the right foods?
I would say, how do I want to answer that? It depends on the person.
Okay.
So when I got involved, I took the cheap route, which was the ketogenic, the ketone strips.
Oh.
Because I wanted to just have a marker, if you will.
Okay.
And then I came to understand about the meters and all that were available, but didn't want to invest in that.
Okay.
Once I did the ketone strips, and which again, everyone says the blood work is much more exact. And I do believe that, the science of that. I then started looking at my proteins and fats, my veggies ratio, if you will, to make sure that based on science, I wasn't kicking myself out of ketosis. And then sometimes I would purposely have the carbs, different types of carbs, to see if I was still staying in ketosis.
Okay.
Because then I really got to understand what my ratios were for my body. There are people who believe you should be able to have, 15% of your nutrients come from carbs.
Okay.
But again, more fibrous or vegetables. Mm-hmm. And then the rest being your fat and your protein, but not having so much protein that it kicks you out of ketosis. I really believe the person who's committed to this will find the benchmarks for themselves, and then they'll use those with ketone strips or the keto meters, doing your blood tests to see where you're at. Once you know that, you can feel it. I can physically feel when I'm no longer in ketosis.
Okay.
It's almost like, that's why I talk about the energy piece. My energy compared to my peers, and I'm not saying that we're old. I just seem to have the energy of a 30-something, late 20 to early 30-something year old.
Mm-hmm.
Compared to others my age.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is a part of that lifestyle? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I'm up and down all day and working with people in an environment of activity.
Right.
So, of course, it's lifestyle. Mm-hmm. But even with that lifestyle, if I'm not following a ketogenic approach, I would be so sluggish mid-afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm much more alert. Even when I'm driving, it seems like I have a heightened sense of everything.
Okay.
Everything. That my brain is more cognizant, that my movement is sharper, that all of the above. It's kind of hard to explain, but once you experience it, I promise to whomever's exploring that, once you experience it, you will know the difference, hands down.
Interesting. It's interesting because everybody that I have talked to that has done keto, and this is something I'm really kind of intrigued with it, that everybody from an Uber driver to, I can't remember who else I was talking, for some reason I ran into a ton of people for a while that were doing keto, and they were all saying, this is the easiest diet I've ever done.
I can
find food to eat and I feel great. And I feel like my brain is working and I'm, thinking better. And
it's
so fun and fascinating to have that experience for people.
Sure.
Feel like this is a great thing. And again, there's that concern about if the body is in ketosis for too long, is that bad? And I think you addressed that well too. So if somebody wanted to dive into this, like what are the things they need to be aware of and concerned? Like if they had a list of foods, could they go on that and be safe? Or do you think getting the strips is a good idea, or going to the doctor and saying, hey, this is what I'm planning on doing. I want a beginning marker, which is always a great idea for anybody. Mm-hmm. Be a great idea for anybody.
Yeah. So I'd say all the above. When I really went, okay, I'm going to do ketogenic, I wanted to see what my lean muscle mass to body fat ratio was.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a form of technology called an in-body machine, which essentially is shooting little electrodes through your body.
Okay.
But it looks like a scale with two handles that you put your hand on.
Okay.
And I wanted to see my lean muscle mass, body fat ratio, as well as where I stored my body fat. We talked about my torso before, knowing that I needed to be leaner in my torso than I had been. And I also wanted to look at inflammation, which that technology will show inflammation.
Interesting.
All of the above is so important. Inflammation has a direct relationship to metabolism. And if your inflammation is high, it can affect your body in ways that just does not serve you. There, many moons ago, another company that I was involved with for a while used and created something called Alkalete. And the Alkalete would reduce the acidity in your body so that our bodies were less acidic and more balanced, or what's the word? Alkaline. Thank you. Couldn't find that word. So knowing that inflammation piece was important to me, because I, like others had, you had mentioned, questioning, okay, is this going to create inflammation or is it going to reduce inflammation? Mm-hmm. I didn't know, because it was something that I had not done for any longevity outside of the bodybuilding. And I should, let me go back to the bodybuilding for a moment. When we were doing our carb depleting, we were usually eating the turkey and the chicken that I mentioned, or the tuna. Uh-huh. We weren't eating higher fat foods.
Okay.
So though we felt good, I, and not to offend anybody, but I felt like a dumb blonde.
Oh.
My brain was very spacey.
Okay.
When you're ketogenic, meaning you're getting the higher fat foods in, mm-hmm. your brain is being nurtured and fed good, healthy fats.
Okay.
Which was not something that I was doing as a bodybuilder. So that was a distinct difference as well. I should mention that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Night and day difference. When I was getting ready for a bodybuilding show, I'd say probably the last 2 weeks before a show, I did very little driving, and it was always on no major roads, because I felt like I needed to focus that much on driving.
That is interesting.
So, yeah. So now let's go back to the Atkins diet. When everybody, I was like, oh my gosh, these people, no wonder they're crazy. But they were eating higher fat.
Uh-huh. Yes.
And, okay. Right? Mm-hmm. So there's so many things, if we think about history and patterns of behavior and quote unquote diets that were very popular for a certain time and different communities of folks, mm-hmm. there were some pluses that really came out of all that.
Interesting. That's mm-hmm. That's the thing. It's all the quote unquote fad diets. There's what we learn from that. I mean, I think
exactly.
if we can pay attention and learn from that, or if the science people can pay attention and really learn from that, we can learn a lot of what works and what doesn't work. And I think we've done that with the low fat diet. We've figured out that
yep.
doesn't seem to be serving us well at mm-hmm. all.
Not at all. Not at all. Unfortunately, we really got a lot of marketing.
Right.
We experienced a lot of marketing around that.
Right.
But no, I highly recommend getting your benchmarks, because you're going to want to know what changed. Mm-hmm. And then I like the ketone strips, because we like to see, we like to know. Mm-hmm. And the ketone strips made that simple. And you're giving your brain, I'm going to say, feedback. So you can now be more mindful of how you're feeling and some other things. And then after you get there, then explore what works and what doesn't work for you.
Okay.
And I promise our bodies always, 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 if we're listening, our bodies will always tell us what we need. Mm-hmm. Always. And that's, sometimes we're just too busy to listen.
Right. Right. It takes sometimes some education to know what we're listening for, too. I
yep.
think sometimes if that's a new thing for somebody, knowing that or having that experience and start to understand, oh, that's what that feeling means. That's
sure.
what this is
sure.
all about. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So the strips. So you're kind of saying, hey, it makes sense to do that. That way, A, you know that you're in ketosis. You know that you've
mm-hmm.
reached it. Is that something? Is it a saliva thing or a urine thing?
Oh, it's urine.
Okay.
And people usually bought them. I'm trying to remember. There's some pharmacies that have ketone strips.
Okay.
Otherwise, a lot of people I know of would buy them on Amazon. They were cheap and they could get them in good quantity.
Okay.
And then when you get the ketoners, those strips or testing instruments, papers, are more expensive.
Okay.
But then you're not needing to do it as often either, unless you're trying to get to what they call a certain millimole of ketones, which that's getting very scientific.
Okay.
When people are going, okay, I want to get to a certain millimole, that means that they are doing this for probably more than just nutrition.
Okay. Okay. Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And a good place for a list of good foods and
good
kind of
foods,
mindset,
yes,
about that?
I would first, if you can get your hands on the Ketogenic Bible, I would start there. Because the scientists who are involved also work with athletes and performance. So the foods that they're recommending, they recommend to athletes.
Okay.
So I like that source. I'm trying to remember, because before these guys that did the Keto Bible, there was, these guys were scientists who worked with runners. One book that I found when I first got involved was called Ketone Power. Very interesting read of a young guy who just kind of wanted to find out for himself.
Mm.
Super fuel for optimal mental health and ultimate physical performance. So that appealed to me because of a performance again. And he was using his own body as the test instrument.
Mm-hmm.
And I always find that fascinating.
Right.
So it wasn't based on research. It was based on a practical experience.
Mm-hmm.
The other guys that he referenced, which kind of had me then go and look at some others. Mercola is Dr. Mercola, who's got his own website.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's a good source to start with. He doesn't appeal to everyone, but I think his research is sound.
Okay.
And then the other person I'm looking for, Jeff Volek. Oh, okay. His book was The Many Facets of Keto Adaptation.
Okay.
So that goes back to like 2013.
Okay.
And then the other researcher who's been involved in also creating exogenous ketones and actually did a TED talk on ketones and cancer is Dominic D'Agostino. And he has his own website and food recommendations as well. And he lives it. I mean, he's one that will have the meter because he wants to know in terms of millimole. He still lifts like a competitive bodybuilder.
Okay.
He's never competed, but his physicality is like that.
Okay.
Where most people that I see who are ketogenic or more svelte, or did it for fat loss, so they're not big on, you know, lifting heavy and all that good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking of one more person. But Jeff Volek, I mean, his research, I want to say he's one of the first researchers.
Okay.
Did you want me to cover anything regarding exogenous ketones?
What? I don't even know what that is exactly.
Oh, okay. So exogenous ketones also put your body in a state of ketosis.
Uh-huh.
It comes in the form of a powder.
Oh, okay.
And you mix it in water or whatever you want to mix it in.
Okay.
But it will place your body in a state of ketosis.
Okay. So it's a help, basically.
Yeah, I think of it as a great way for somebody to explore what it means to be in ketosis without having to commit to the nutrition right away.
Ah, okay. So, okay. And you'd still eat carefully while you're doing that?
More mindful.
Okay.
But it's okay for you to kind of have something that really leverages, if you will, that state.
Okay, interesting.
Oh, here's another book. One more book. Here it is. I kept searching in my own library. Dr. Stephen Finney, spelled P-H, and Jeff Volek wrote the book, The Art and Science of Low Carbohydrate Living.
Okay.
And that book, because it's the art and science, goes into an awful lot about nutrition.
Okay.
And it's also something that you can find at a local library.
Oh, great.
So if people want to explore, that's going to have everything from recipes to how to prepare your food to food combinations.
Okay.
That I think are very helpful.
Okay. So there's different ways to go about doing this, but they all sound kind of, I mean, the principles are all still the same. And it's just maybe different methods. Like, what would you say would be some of the exactly things? Is a different kind of looking at things differently and how you combine those foods? Or,
well, oh shoot, sorry, just thought of another person. I didn't mention any gals. Maria Emmerich, who's also on Facebook.
Okay.
And she does recipes all the time, all ketogenic. She must have, gosh, I have 3 of her cookbooks. She must have 20 of them. And I love her cookbooks. They're very appealing. She has comfort food. She has a ketogenic comfort food cookbook.
Oh, fun.
Yeah. So if you say, I want to try this, but I have my old favorites, highly recommend her cookbook.
Okay. That's good. And that's sometimes like so helpful for people to just know,
yeah,
okay, there's this go-to if I need it, which is which is just sometimes comforting to have in the back of your mind, no matter where you're at.
Exactly. Exactly. I'm trying to think if there's anything else that people might experience.
Yes.
I think people are always curious about, quote unquote, the side effects of being ketogenic.
Yes.
So I already mentioned the mental clarity. I've already mentioned the energy. I do believe people that I've supported in exploring this are in a better mood. They're happier people. Just because they feel better, right? I know of people who have greater rest. They sleep better. Of course, we've already talked about the cravings. Mature adults who have at least done exogenous ketones with me definitely boost in memory. Yeah, those are things I like to mention because when people choose to do this, again, having awareness of those possibilities and then to experience them, I just think it's a huge plus.
Right. There seems to be a lot of positives and not a whole lot of negatives from your experience, which is pretty great.
Very much so. And I really don't think it's that hard. I really, you know, if people would just take the carbs out of their diet. Now, if their diet's all carbs, well, maybe, that'll be hard.
Right. And that is, for say, that's a big shift, right?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
It is.
If that's where you're at or that's where you've fallen into, then it seems like a big change. But
oh, then it's huge.
Yeah.
It's huge. I mean, even so, I was home at Christmas time and I opened my mother and my sister's pantry and that's all I see is everything in boxes. And if you open my pantry, you would find, I'm trying to even think, my pizza sauce, my sardines, my tuna, anchovies. I have a solid coconut oil along with the liquid and a balsamic vinaigrette. You would see, I have one can of collard greens. There's a type of collard green that I love that's home style that I can throw in a pot and make and just eat the whole can.
It's, oh,
nice. That's nummy without having to make my own, you know, collard greens or cook them all day. I'm trying to think. My nuts. So I have pistachios and almonds. I have sunflower seeds, my almond flour, my protein, my eggs, my fishes. I have frozen cauliflower rice as well as fresh. I don't have anything in a box. I don't.
Right.
And it was sad. I'm probably 3 years ago now. My phone got wet. My iPhone got wet. And I had to go to the store and buy rice. And I went, oh my gosh. You know, most people are buying rice to eat. I'm buying it to take the moisture out of my phone.
Right.
Chuckle over that. People are like, you don't have rice in your house? No, I don't have rice in my house.
Right. That's funny. So you mentioned pizza sauce and I'm thinking,
yeah,
anything like that sounds like that's like the one processed food kind of that you have in your house.
It is. But here, no, I'm going to grab the can so I can read it to you. I did my research. It's like, okay, if I'm going to buy a pizza sauce, I wanted to get what I could that was good for me.
Right.
So it is, the brand is, Pastorelli, P-A-S-T-O-R-E-L-L-I.
Okay.
It is a BPA free can. Mm-hmm. That's when I do my research. I do get into my research. Corn syrup free, gluten free, preservative free.
Okay.
Okay. And I mean, this is a family that is just committed to what you're going to be eating when it comes to their sauces.
Nice. And what are the ingredients? Yeah. Like, is it also sugar-free?
Sure. Let's see. I'll put my glasses on.
That's sometimes the tricky part with buying some of those, is getting the sugar out of there.
In a quarter cup, 40 calories, 1 gram of fat. Total carbs is 6 grams of carbs.
Okay.
2 of those are dietary fiber, 5 sugars, 2 grams of protein. Ingredients, California tomato puree, which is water, tomato paste, non-GMO expeller pressed canola oil, imported extra virgin olive oil, salt, imported Romano cheese, pasteurized sheep's milk, cheese culture, sea salt, and enzymes, spices, garlic, and citric acid. If you have an allergy, it says contain milk.
Okay.
So no there's sugar. No,
That's awesome. Nope. That's just so hard to find.
It's I know.
Non-sugar added spaghetti sauce or
exactly.
Sugar, so nice.
And it was funny because I went, okay, I want to make my own pizza, and I'm looking at what's on the shelf, and then I found this.
Nice.
And this is at a major grocery store chain here in town.
Great.
I'm not going to a specialty store. It's a Cub Foods.
Right. Okay. So that's good to know too, because that's the other thing to worry about is where they're going to shop.
Oh yeah.
With this diet, it's pretty much whole foods. So they're foods you can find anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the food industry really is having to change. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you look at General Mills' corporate offices here in town, mm-hmm. the way that they're preparing their cereals and all is completely different than it was prepared before.
Right.
And here's the sad, sad thing. You know, I think we're going to come full circle. Carbs, initially, when we got them, were not highly processed.
Mm-hmm.
They became more highly processed because the food industry wanted to get more for their dollar, i.e. produce what we were eating at a lower cost.
Mm-hmm.
So the fillers and all that stuff became popular because it reduced the cost to get the product to us, which our price didn't go down. Mm-hmm. If anything, the price went up. So now the food industry is recognizing we're reading our labels and we're not going to have all the highly processed stuff that we used to, at least. I should say some communities, other communities, it's so far removed.
Mm.
But I do believe that now we're kind of, the food industry's going, wait a minute, in order to stay competitive and maybe to even exist or survive, we have to make changes.
Right.
So the pasta and all that, I mean, I remember recommending Barilla pasta long before having carbs was such a bad thing, you know,
mm-hmm.
and that's because they made their pasta with, oh gosh, the same thing, chickpeas.
Oh, right.
Yeah. So it was a denser pasta. You didn't want to eat the huge plate size servings that we see in commercials because it was so heavy.
Right. And high in carbs, but you're not eating as much.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. So. And then the more ketogenic, I mean, the ZEC population grows, which I really believe it will grow for health and wellness reasons. Yes, it'll be popular because people want to get leaner. Mm-hmm. But when people recognize the benefits in terms of their health and wellness, or with the increase in cancer, those of us who are looking to minimize that risk choose this as an approach. I think it's going to change a big part of our communities.
Right.
Because people are doing for other reasons.
And it's interesting too, as people do it and have their health outcomes. I mean, again, it's like I say, it's an interesting thing. I know a good share of people who are vegan, and I can, in my brain, I can absolutely get behind that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I love the concept. I love the plant-based diet idea. And I And I could totally make sense of that. And I can totally make sense of how our bodies can make sense of that. And I sometimes wonder if each person has their own sort of needs. So kind of how much of our body's history is it going to work to be paleo or keto? Is it going to work to be vegetarian? I don't know. I don't understand, haven't researched hugely the blood type theory, but I know for some people that works really, really well.
Yeah. And I used it as a trainer.
You did? Okay.
I did as a personal trainer. Okay. Yeah. I mean, it was at its time. So we're going back to the late '90s.
Right.
Yeah. Late '90s. At its time, we didn't have license in Minnesota. Our dietitians have to be licensed. So we didn't have licensed registered dietitians available to us.
Right.
So we as trainers were trying to come up with the best approach.
Okay.
And for me, it was the blood type. Mm-hmm. And more times than not, that definitely helped people.
Okay.
Kind of begin this journey. And again, once people are more mindful and more aware of what they're feeling and listen to their body will tell them.
Right.
So people go, well, I don't need this much protein. Well, okay, you're not working out and you're right. You don't need that much protein. Mm-hmm. But for somebody who is doing some pretty serious lifting, gal or a guy, and their bodies need to recover, they're going to need that added protein.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's kind of like being a Minnesotan and I'm taking vitamin D now.
Right.
I haven't taken vitamin D in years.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm looking at the research, again, associated with cancer.
Right.
You know, most of the people who are challenged with cancer are also vitamin D deficient.
Vitamin D. Yeah.
And I'm in Minnesota where we don't get a whole lot of sun.
Right.
And even when we get it, I'm not in it.
Yeah,
and with
exactly.
the pigmentation of my skin, I need the vitamin D.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I mean, up here, we can have sunny days, but if you're inside a building,
exactly.
You're
exactly.
You know,
I'm not training people outside.
Right. Right. So it makes a huge difference. Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah. It will be interesting futuristically to see how this all goes. And I kind of wonder too, if like, there isn't the, you know, I keep reading books that are very different than each other. You know, I mean, I was reading a bunch of books on diabetes for a while, and there was the high carb diabetes theory, eat high carbs, eat quality high carbs, but eat high carbs. And then there was the, no, that's horrible. Eat the, you know, eat this. And I'm still kind of wondering sometimes, I wonder if we, if people get into if you find the right diet for your body, which
I know,
article in Time magazine last year that was saying, all these different diets are good for the people they work for and not, they don't work for the people they don't work for. And
sure.
we don't really know how to figure all of that out, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, maybe if you're doing one thing or another, you know, if you're doing, yes, you're doing high carb, but you're doing really good quality carbs and your body can handle it, that can work for you.
Exactly. Exactly.
And, you know, and so it's kind of like, but if we're all over the board with especially processed food, and then maybe our body doesn't know quite what to do with it. I mean,
exactly.
You know, so it's
that's perfect. It's perfect. It is. And it's something, again, if each of us become our own advocates and own our own health, we'll find out what works for us.
Right. Right.
We really will.
And it is a searching. I mean, it is a, you're your own chemistry set.
You are.
Well, thank you. This is wonderful. And I definitely, if you have anything else that you want to throw out there, do. But if you'd also like to share how to reach you, if somebody is just excited about this and they would like to work with you, feel free to share how to reach you if that's something somebody wants to do. And you're in Minneapolis?
I am a suburb of Minnetonka.
Okay.
And I'm going to provide, let's see, two ways of reaching me. First, email, which is DJ, like disc jockey, at P as in Paul, N as in Nancy, P as in Paul, journeys, journeys.biz.
Okay.
And of course, mention how they found me.
Yes.
I want to give credit where credit is due. And then my phone number of 612-910-6500. And it's been that way since I got a phone, so it's not changing. And I already said how old I am, so you know how long I've had this number. Awesome. There you go.
All right. And I will definitely put that in the show notes too. So
sure.
Available. But
you know, and I thank you for the opportunity. I know my purpose, why I believe I'm here, God's will for me, is to be a resource. I have been a resource to people when it comes to becoming their own advocate with their doctors, trying to share with their family or loved ones why they're taking a certain approach. Let me be a resource. Google is not our friend. Google is not our friend. So if you're looking for something and even what I would recommend as the best source or resource, like you were mentioning, you know, different authors or websites, mm-hmm. don't hesitate to reach out. Because I believe that's my purpose. I think being a computer geek at Honeywell had me really recognize how important that conduit or that connection can be to getting an answer or to getting things connected up the way that you'd like them to be. Mm. And I think of myself as a conduit. Let me at least provide you with a resource or a reference that reduces your frustration and gives you a good foundation to work from as you find what's best for you and your body.
That makes sense. You want people to do the best they can to have the success.
Exactly.
Or if they don't have success, know why they're not having success.
Exactly.
If this isn't for you, or there's a difference if something isn't for you, or you really haven't done it in a way to let your body have the chance to decide if it's for
right.
it or not.
Right. And our bodies will always follow our mind. So if people are feeling any reservation about this, I promise you they're not going to have success because their mind has already decided that our bodies will always follow our minds.
Right. We've got to be ready and excited about something.
Yeah.
To do.
Yeah. And then we'll take it on, you know, as, like you said, kind of like an experiment or as a challenge to see what's possible.
Right. And it's nice to do it before something goes wrong when you sort of have
yes.
to do something.
Absolutely.
You know, and you're forced in the corner and then it's less fun, but you have a drive. It's just less fun.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, this is great. Thank you. I'm excited
sure.
to get this up and out. And like I said, I personally, science is a complex thing and I know too much to, I don't necessarily know that I advocate for anything in particular. I advocate for what works, and I have my own mm-hmm. theories and opinions, but I'm excited to hear when things are working and when they're consistently working, and that gives people excitement to try.
Of course.
And a step forward in any direction is a great thing. So I'm just excited
for
all the knowledge you're sharing and your long-term experience, which I think is hugely valuable. So
yeah.
Wonderful.
Thanks again.
Thank you.
Yeah. Take care, my friend.
All right. You too.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I just want to toss a couple things out there. Certainly, I know this is a diet that if you look at what people are saying about it, there is certainly some debate. As quite frankly, there really is with any diet. It's just trying to suss out where does the real concern come in and whose interests are shaping that concern. Do your research. Check in with different medical professionals who have educated opinions and open minds that might be able to give you some guidance or some really good thoughts to chew on. Talk to people who are doing it and doing it well and healthfully and see how they're doing and how they're feeling. Check in with yourself. See how it feels to you. This diet is something that is a little more extreme and limited and specific. So for some, that is what makes it attractive and easy and clear-cut. And for others, that's where it brings in some concern. I know I still feel like I have questions about getting enough vegetable and variety and that kind of thing. In all truth and reality, when I think about many of us eating our regular normal diet, I'm concerned about that same thing as well. If you do any research on this diet, you might run into the information that talks about how it has been successful with kids with epilepsy. And they don't really quite know why. Fascinating if that ever gets figured out. But they have had success with kids on this diet. It's also been really successful with folks who are very overweight and obese as well. Again, if you're going to do this, make sure that you don't have something that's contraindicative that would make it not a good thing for you. So a couple of those things are there's some concern with type 1 diabetes and folks who have that, and also people with liver and kidney issues. So something to be aware of for sure. I'm not sure exactly how far that goes and if there are ways around it. That, again, also something worth looking at. DJ touched on this, and this is certainly good for all of us. Looking at getting good quality sourced meat. It's not that you have to go overboard with meat on this diet, and I think that needs to be really clear, but part of it is having good quality sourced meat. And processed meat is certainly a concern in general, so just being aware of that. For some people on this diet, that is sometimes the direction they go is eating a lot more processed meat. So that can be certainly a concern. And then there are also the questions about being in ketosis for an extended period of time. So what some people do is they will be in ketosis for a period of time, but then they take a break from that. And they say that they feel really good that way. So just to be clear, I do not know what those intervals look like for people exactly. That's one comment that comes up is, well, if this works for you, you don't have to be in ketosis all the time. You can be in ketosis at particular intervals. The keto diet is definitely taking out pretty much all of that processed food. That is certainly some of the main concern about what we're eating these days. And certainly ketogenic diet isn't the only way to do that. But if somebody feels inspired by it and it's a way they feel like they can get over a hump, maybe it's something to consider. And I think I've said this isn't a diet that I have experienced myself. But I have been honestly continually surprised at the positive things I hear from people who have been doing it for quite a long time in how they're feeling better than they've ever felt. And it's working for them and their test results are good. So something I just definitely wanted to explore, understand, and take into consideration and share with all of you who wanted to go on the ride with me. Thank you so much for listening, and check out the other podcasts if you haven't. Next week, we're going to be talking with Cheryl Larson, and she does osteopathic work here in Duluth. She's going to tell us about her philosophy and her training and what in the world is an osteopath anyway. So please check that out. Don't forget to hop on the wellnessrenpodcast.com page. You can, of course, listen to all of the podcasts there, but you can also put in your email if you would like an email to pop into your email box that just says, hey, the podcast is out and this is what it is. I welcome you to check out Facebook as well and connect with me there at facebook.com/wellnessren. This is Judy. Have a wonderful day, and here's to you finding the pieces that fit your health puzzle. Be well.